I'm Megan Hennessy from Archiphone, and I'm going to be chairing the session, and we'll be hearing about...
And we can't hear you.
Okay, I will project.
I'm on the first row.
Okay. I'm Megan Hennessy from Archiphone. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to be... I will be chairing the session on online access. We're going to be hearing about a couple of great online projects. We're going to have Sam Berlowski and Dave Soibert talking about the Victor discography. And we're going to have Charles Amerkanen, Adrian Caldwell, and Stephen Upjohn talking about the Other Minds Archive. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. Sam and Dave.
Thank you, and welcome to this afternoon's session. I'm going to let other people introduce our work today. Can we get audio? There we go.
Well, Bill asked me to set the ball rolling. May I say, first of all, that we will welcome questions. Because the project is so big, and the introduction of the first volume already gave you an idea of what we have gone through to start it and what we're going through to continue. That we can talk, as you just said, Michael just said, Bill can talk about it until 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I can take over, and still not tell you what you want to know. So we're going to give you a very brief outline of what we're doing, and you all picked up, I hope, or got these handouts. And that'll give you an idea of the way the information appears at Victor, and then the front page is how we straighten it out, all of that, and what we're doing with the information that we gather. Now, I must admit, personally, that I feel very much inhibited here, because everyone in the room probably is an old-time discoverer. Or at least, if you're not an old-time discoverer, you're experienced. This was my first essay at discovery. Bill was wily enough not to let me know without letting myself in. And where angels fear to tread, sort of. I went blithely in and said, well, look, instead of just copying out all the Red Seal stuff, why don't we do it complete? And he quietly wrote me back and said, well, if you want to do it, by all means. It was sort of launching something that plunk, a lead boat. So I started to copy stuff out last year. Unfortunately, although we started about 20 years ago, we should have started at least 20 years earlier. Because during the 10 or 15 years prior to our getting in there, a lot of people had been working at the files, working at them both as squirrels and as termites. Anyone who's done any research at RCA will bear me out in this. They have been extremely generous. They've been...
For those of you that don't know, on the left, we have Ted Fagan, and on the right, your right, we have Bill Morin, William R. Morin, and they were the authors of people who started the encyclopedic discography of Victor Recordings in the 1960s. As you've probably figured out already, this video was shot in this very room here at Stanford University before they painted the wall here black. But this video is from the ARS conference in 1985 here at Stanford.
85.
This was just the first volume of the discography, which was the Pre-Matrix series. It was published in 1983, and this was sort of their debut of that first volume. The second volume was published in 1986, came out in 1987. Ted actually, unfortunately, died shortly there after. Bill is no longer with us either, having passed away in 2004. So we have since, Sam and I have taken up this project after it was here at Stanford for a while and are continuing it. We presented it at the ARS conference in 2005,
six
in Seattle, Washington. 2 years. And what we're very pleased to bring to you today is not a work in progress, but the third volume, so to speak, of the encyclopedic discography of Victor Recordings, which is through 1913. So we've, in the past, let's see, 85 to 2008, so in 23 years, we've finished 5 years of Victor. But we are on a good path to progress now, and we'll be adding more. So I'm going to turn it over to Sam here, and he can tell you some about the database, and we're going to show you the live web version, which will be online for free to the public shortly. And take it away.
Thank you. Well, I wish you hadn't said that 5 years and 23 years, but I used to work for the feds where we like job security. I should say we dedicate this presentation and our database to those two gentlemen who made it possible. I can't tell you too much about what they went through to make it possible, particularly Ted Fagan and working in RCA Victor all those years. But we want to thank a lot of other people here too, and we're going to get to them a little later. The presentation that was either 2 or 3 years ago, I sort of like to think of as part one of this presentation. That was a presentation on the history of the project, a longer story about Ted and Bill, and you looked at our raw database, you looked at the FileMaker database. This one is more a little bit about the history of Victor, a little bit about the primary sources that we've been privileged enough to have access to, and actually the rollout of the database. So this is our subtitle is, I guess, Resources and Rollout. The at one time, and I sorry to repeat myself, but you know, I'm sure you remember everything we said 3 years ago, but I will. they say later in this about 48-minute video, well, we're going to put out books, and we think it's going to be about 35 to 40 volumes. And in the meantime, Greenwood's gone out of business in terms of discographies, and if you to put this in books, no one could afford it. Few of us would have access to it unless we could go to a library. Greenwood does not put up discographies on the web. So we have a commitment, through the generosity of Bill Morin primarily, to put this on the web where it will be free, and Dave will be showing you that in just a few minutes. In terms of this as a discography, we think it's unique for a number of reasons, not just because it's on the web, but because on the web, it's a database, it's dynamic. We've looked at Bill Morin's book, his volume one, annotated, and it's just scribbled with things that he wanted to add, subtract, things that people had sent in, all kinds of corrections, and so this is always a work in progress in some respects. We will be dependent on people like you to come to give us feedback and help us, correct data, but even better, augment the data in it. In other ways, it's unique in terms of a discography. It's a fully relational database, and I don't want to go into, what the details of that is, but each name, or at least name attached to a role, we'll talk about, for instance, Victor Herbert, cellist, is in there only once, and then everything links to that name. It's not so much that the looking under the hood is so fascinating to everybody, but it allows us to sort of treat this discography like a prism. And David is going to rotate and shift this prism around for you and show you the different ways that you'll be able to search this database and look at the history of the Victor Talking Machine Company, later RCA Victor. And then the other thing I think which is almost unique, certainly even not in the original books, is we're trying to do our best to show the provenance of our mistakes or all of our data. We want to show you where we got what we got when we can. In part, it's to help show what we're not sure of, what we are sure of. It's a way to thank everyone who helped us, and it's a way to sort of cover ourselves as well. I thought, and while I think this is one of the richest discographies offered on the web, and there's a lot to do, as you may know, Bill Klinger is leading an ARSC effort to sort of come up with a sort of universal database structure for discography. We're about halfway to that, but it does not follow the UDDS model. It might someday, but UDDS might actually be a discography and a catalog. UDDS is going to describe artifacts as well as the intellectual data in a recording. We're, for the most part, just describing the intellectual event, the recording event. So Ted talked about the kindness of Victor, at that time RCA Victor, now then BMG, now Sony BMG. They've been awfully good to us. They've allowed us access to their files, primarily ledgers, and allowed us to come in and scan them and use them for this project. And I think it's one of the most exciting things about the project. It's a privilege, really, to have access to really the earliest documentation that's extant on these sessions. So I sort of wanted to begin by sort of showing you some of the resources that we have, and showing you a little of those, and then showing you how we've translated into the database. As I said, you're not going to look at the database raw. You're going to be looking at the web view. A little bit more, as I said, we're going to open it to you, and I don't get up here without giving you a clipboard. So we are testing this. I mean, it's not a beta site. This is our database, but we're not going to open it entirely to the public. We want to start with an ARCH group, and those of you who would like to be sent the URL and things like that, please sign our clipboard, and maybe I'll pick them up this time. I just found the ones from the copyright sessions. Anyway, I want to show you a few things, and I think if I could stand here and do it. They're sort of real, very fast. Victor went through in the very beginning. It is a primitive company and a primitive technology. As most of you know, there was no matrix system. There was no system to make multiple stampers, that is, multiple negatives, to press additional records. You made a master. They coded it. They made a negative and pressed other recordings until they wore out. And then about 1903, they came up with a process to make multiple mothers and stampers. So the very beginning, they called it, Bill, I think Ted actually coined this term, the pre-matrix era. And the very first recording they made on the pre-matrix era was by George Broderick. That's not the total screen, unfortunately. I only show this because I love George Broderick's signature. This is a signature at the top of the matrices very quickly. I want to talk a lot about penmanship here. In the late 19th century, there were sort of rivals for different kinds of penmanship. We learned Palmer penmanship, but the rival for Palmer penmanship was Spencerian hand. And that George Broderick was written in Spencerian hand. Why am I telling you this? Because it's the grandfather of Len Spencer, one of the first great Victor artists, or at least first Victor artists. I just want to show you these ledgers real fast, show you the signature, David. Over here, the next thing, one of the record one he made for Victor was a reading of Eugene Field's Departure, a little poem, and we're going to show you the entry for that, and we can show that very fast. I don't have the pointer, but you see that, Eugene Field's poem, Departure, next slide. The ledgers also open up to a certain extent the activities of Victor, some of the internal workings. This is not a very well documented period. Here we learn it's not for the departure that on return on October 4th, 1901, 329 copies. And we think that's how many copies they got out of that plate, out of that initial one. Next one, please. And here, there's A1, which is the departure, and one of the great mysteries to me, Patrick Feaster's looked at it, and this might be solved, is these little checkerboards, these tic-tac-toe boards, which as near as we can tell is probably the setup of the studio in some way, but we haven't figured it out. This is only in the very earliest ledgers. Some of the other indications are what kind of horn they use, what kind of cutter they have,
soundbox.
Pardon me?
Soundbox.
Soundbox, thank you. And the horn, but we haven't entirely, we haven't really looked at it at all. We hope that someday maybe we could get authorization to put these ledgers up. A lot of these little, what look like fractions, bear relation to what you see on early Berliner discs. Let's go to the next slide. And again, there's a close-up of this little chicken scratch. In 1903, as I said, Victor started making recordings with masters and mothers and stampers, and they started a numbering system all over again. And they started with a letter series, A for 7-inch, B for 10-inch, C for 12-inch, D for 14-inch, and then, or D for 8-inch, thank you, or someone I heard, and then D, E for 8-inch, 7, 12, 14, 8. And we're going to go through those and show you the next ledger real fast, and we can see some of those. This is the Victor Light opera company. This is a ledger from late in the period of what we're looking at, and that is to say that of the first second ledger group. They don't have all those hieroglyphics, but here, this is 1910. Next slide, please. And I need to, if I had, could acknowledge one person, you know, not on the payroll without whom this wouldn't be possible, other than Bill and Ted, it would be John Bolick, who's been enormously generous to us. He's sitting here. We steal everything we can from him. And we wouldn't be, if it took, you know, 28 years to get to 1913, we'd be on 1909 without him. John's written this wonderful book on Victor Gems that's published by Mainspring Press, in which all the personnel of the Victor Opera, Operetta, Musical Theater, medleys, and some of it, most of it, a lot of it John got listening to it on the documentation, but here is all the personnel, next slide please, of this selection. So you see Mrs. Wheeler, Ms. Wheeler, Marsh, Dunlap, Keys, Mack, which is McDonough, Weirenrath, Cooley, to have that access to these ledgers and sort of see this in the hand. Now, the one thing about these ledgers is, at least, well, later, these were done soon after they were in the studio, but they're arranged alphabetically by artists. They're not chronological. So there's something missing. There was probably something in the studio, but maybe not in this area, because look at the next slide. This is the right-hand side of that entry. You can see Wheeler's name up there in the upper left, and here's this little circle with circles within it, plus 14. I can only guess that means there were four horns. That was an awfully big ensemble for 1910. This is a lot of singers for 1910. I can only guess these are things about, again, the cutter and the sound box, but also, I think, probably something to do with the horns here. How many horns? Would you guess so, Bill? I don't know.
Awesome.
But we don't know. I'm going to go through one more ledger, and then David will show you some of the database. In 1911, they started doing their domestic ledgers, that is, those recorded in the United States chronologically, generally, and, I've lost my blue history cards. Yet another step in the Victor process. When a record was made, they made a little blue card. And John Bolick has spent his life, he dreams in blue cards. We'd be a little bit in microfilm and go up there occasionally, but John's dreams are in baby blue. That's the color of them, in honor of our blue history cards. But anyway, here is the release in the Victor, sort of their mid-grade series, their 6000 series, 6031. This is the released card indicating the release of the Victor Light Opera Company of that piece. You see at the top, B9671, the 10-inch master, we know from B9671. There is a recording date on here, but we don't use that. We go back to the ledgers when we can, though in this case it was right, I think, December 5th, 1910. But what's most valuable about these blue cards, is, in addition to tracing every different release of Victor, because a matrix number like this or a master might have gone on several different discs, is that we get the year it was listed and sometimes the year it went out of print. Now John will tell you you can't always depend on it, but we will credit where we got it, and if we're wrong, blame whoever put this together in 1920. In this case, this was a single phase disc, the 60,000, and right under the B, this is 45181, and that was the double face series, the first double face disc, maybe the only one that had this particular disc on it. After 1910, they went into a new kind of ledger. We're going to show you those really very fast. Is that the next one, David? And this one is Victor Herbert's orchestra, and there's a close-up of, again, you're seeing different take numbers. 10572, take 1, D, it was destroyed. Take 2, D, it was destroyed. Take 3, it was mastered. There aren't many other discographies that will tell you all about what was never issued and was thrown away, though they may be in vaults. We don't know. In this case, this is Victor Herbert's orchestra, but we do not indicate a conductor in our database because we don't have hard evidence that Victor Herbert actually conducted this session. And that's what, you know, we hope we could come up with it. Someone might come up with it. Someone might come up with Herbert's diary. Maybe I'll read Ed Waters' biography, other biographies, and we'll know more. But I think I grew up with Jim Smart and John Philip Sousa, who, you know, loved collecting his check from Victor but wouldn't show up at the studios. And so it's affected my thinking of Victor Herbert. So with that, I want to sort of, while this is fresh in your mind, some of the resources we've had. I think we also have the Victor Herbert blue card. Do we have that? There you go. It's hard to read. I'll give a lecture next year on the worst preservation microfilming job I've ever seen, which was, but Victor did this just to have a backup, and I can't, you know, as I say, we're very grateful that they loaned us their microfilm so that we could scan it. So you want to take it from here?
Sure.
Virginia Hawthorne come down and help? That was the best.
So here's the online presentation of the discography. As you can see, there's no URL up there now. We're just running it off a local machine. We didn't want to risk funny internet connection troubles. But we're really trying to do two things with the online presentation. Of course, the first question everybody's going to ask is, well, how do you listen to this stuff? And we acknowledge that this is in a era of online everything. It may seem a little anachronistic to have an online discography that isn't linked to the sound. But as you know from the copyright talk yesterday, and as you know as archivists, that the preservation of these old recordings is widely spread between public and private collections, that we couldn't just easily put everything up online. But that is a long-term goal, is to have these linked to audio. But we've got two sort of ways we want to look at this. This is for serious research in the sense that the data is carefully edited and vetted by our team of editors. But we also want it to be accessible to the layperson who may just want to find out something about early sound recording. And here on the left here, where you have display where it says Victor Artists and it says Mario Ancona baritone vocal. We've got a variety of them. There's about 100 of these early Victor Artists. There's a photograph, brings a visual picture to people. And then you can go ahead and click on there and it will immediately take you then to, in this case, the database is complete from 1900, the start of recording activities, to 1913. And so you can see all of the recordings that Mario Ancona recorded for Victor. Eventually, when the database is complete, it will show all of his recordings for Victor. Also underneath here, we have just another little thing to draw people into the database. We have an on this date, which has information about a recording that was made at some point in time on March 28th. This happened to be a recording by John McCormick, the low-backed car, and it gives a matrix number just in case you care to know. And then you can just click on that and it'll take you to the matrix number. And here then is the matrix display. This is actually an interesting one because it does have a wide variety of material associated with it. You can see all the takes down here. There were two takes. And then all the, in that column, label name and number, all the issued recordings from that one particular take. And I want to talk a little bit about the searching of the database. One of the things that I find really interesting about databases like this is that as you play and edit the data over time, the data sort of speaks to you. Either that's us going crazy doing this, or maybe it's just being a database geek, but the data does speak to you. And as we edited this, Sam and I continually talked about how can we get into this data, how can we make it useful for people. You've all seen the database layouts that Brian Rust has done in his discography, or the first two volumes of the EDVR, or new, more modern discographies like the Tony Russell Country Music discography, or there's even online Tyrone Settlemyer's discography online, or the new Tom Lord jazz discography. So they really cover the spectrum. But by and large, the printed discographies are of limited utility for a lot of types of research, just because indexing is back of the book, and you could spend hours flipping back and forth trying to paint some kind of picture of the activities of a particular person, or how many songs were done of this, or how many recordings of a particular piece were done. And fortunately, if you let the data talk to you here, you can come up with something that really makes that come out and pops out instantly and makes the data 100 times more useful, I think. And I think that we're on our way towards some success in that way. And when we send out the URL to you in a couple of weeks so you can take a test ride, what we're really looking for is some feedback from you. We want you to tell us. You're the people that know discographies, have used the print ones, probably have great ideas for how an online version of a discography could work, and we want that feedback. And so that's why we're going to send the URL to you. And a couple of the searches that I want to show to you, I think, illustrate what you can do when you let the data talk to you. Let's go. We've got searches up here. Let's do a, just start off with our basic search screen. This is just your typical Google search. For the novice user, you can just come in and type whatever they want into the database. I'm just going to type in New York and see what happens. In this case, we have three sets of results here. So in names within the discography, we've got two occurrences where New York comes up. We have the Hungarian Choir in New York. We have the New York Grand Opera Chorus. You can see on the right there, in this case, the range is when they recorded and the number of occurrences in the database. So we could then continue on and look at the Hungarian Choir. And there's the 15 recordings by that choir. Here under titles, we have 10 titles where the word New York appears. It turns out most of them are Uncle Josh recordings. But we do have Un Gaucho Por Nueva York by Eugenio Lopez. And that is, you don't see New York in that title, but somewhere in there is a parallel title. Well, that's a good question, how that comes up with new. Yeah, but there is no translation. And then we also have places here. So we have, in this case, I chose New York as a phrase to type in because we also have recording locations where known. And so here's our recording locations. And in this case, we have a view all button then, which will take you to the complete list. The places that would have there is no view all button yet, but it will take you to a screen which shows you all of the occurrences. Mm-hmm.
How did you get that first title in the prop list on the list? See, yes. It doesn't say New York. See, it says Uncle Josh's second visit to the Metropolis.
Let's click on that one, but I think then, here's an additional titles. And so the Victor catalog said Uncle Josh's second visit to the Metropolis, but in the ledgers it was actually indicated as Uncle Josh's trip to the New York.
Okay.
So second. Did you compare these with the catalog entries then?
We use whatever sources we can find. Sam can address that if you want. But it includes catalog discs, ledgers, blue history cards. Let me try one more title search here. This is where you would go in and maybe do some more expert searches. What I want to find is, I want to find all the Verdi recordings that aren't in Italian. So we're going to change that to a not search. So we've got 19 recordings here. We have English language. We have Blanche Aral doing French, right? I think that's the kind of thing that just would not be possible in a print discography. And then each of these is clickable to the full matrix record. We also have some different browse features here, and I think this is where the database gets really interesting. Let's go down and browse some names. So we're taken to a list. If you see on the right there, we're showing the first 50 results out of 4,740 names. So just through 1913, there's 4,700 people and groups that turn up on Victor Recordings, either as composers or lyricists, instrumentalists, a variety of things. And with the help of our programmers, Michael and Brian, what we did was we've tried to normalize data as much as we can. Instead of letting the data be, you know, since it's a relational database, we can have fields that, if you normalize them, then you could very quickly search on them. For example, we have type, which is limits it to composer, lyricist, vocalist, things like that, and then subtype down here. And these lists on the left are generated on the fly, so no matter where you are in the database, it's going to generate a list for you of the search results on the right-hand side of the screen, and then you can pick something here to limit that search results on the right to something. The one I'm interested in is, I happen to think banjo records are some of the best records from this time period. So we see here at the second to the bottom, it says banjo 6. That means there's, in the performer index, there's 6 banjo players. And so there we have all 6 banjo players that recorded for Victor between 1900 and 1913, and Bess Ostman is my favorite. And so then here's a complete list of all Bess Ostman's. He happens to have his picture up there too. So there is these. I want to scroll down all the way to the bottom just to show you one thing. There's also a feature we've put into the database, which is not fully refined yet, but will be. We have commenting. We don't want to turn this into a chat room or anything like that, but we do want to solicit and allow user feedback to the website, whether it's corrections or comments or some degree of interactivity that will let people interact with our data and interact with the other users on the website. So we do have commenting, which we're in the beginning processes of developing, and here's a comment that our programmer Brian put in that about Vess's playing.
I might add, by in saying that we have things through 1913, we have every matrix number issued by Victor before 1914. So if someone like Vess Ostman went back into the studio and made additional takes, we hopefully have all of Vess Ostman's acoustic takes. We don't include the electrical things yet. So that's why when you saw, we keep talking about 1913, you saw Vess Ostman's dates and said to 1916.
And here we have another view. Basically, there's three lenses to this, three sides to this prism. It's people, it's records, and it's matrices or matrixes, the recording event. And so you can spin this prism around and look at it every way. And if you're looking at it through in this case, the discs, then you can see people off to one side and recording events off to the other side. If you spin that around again to the people side, then you see people and the recording events that they were involved with and the discs that they appeared on. And here where we look, we've got, you'll notice off to the right, there's about 17,600 discs that are in the database right now. This is actually just a subset. The entire database is, feeds off a behind-the-scenes database, which is much larger, but this is only the information that's been vetted by our team of editors, of which Sam is the in charge. And my favorite thing is we've been subdividing these down into disc series. And the brilliance of John Bolig's books on Victor are that it's about the records. You can look at lists of records and see what came in what order and where that, who appeared on those. And we're trying to do sort of an online version of that. And if I can find, there it is.
Michael, I met you.
So here, for example, one of the stranger things that Victor did was the 8-inch Victor records, which were sort of a mid-priced disc between the 7-inch and the 10-inch. So here's all, apparently this should be complete. So there's 467 8-inch records that they released, and so you can see an entire list of that. And here are the issue series. They're classified under that. The last thing I want to show you before turning this over again to Sam is in the Matrix browse, it gets considerably more, there are considerably more options for limiting, and all of these then regenerate themselves depending on the limit you choose. So for example, we've got all 19,000 matrix numbers here that we're browsing, and let's say we want to look at spoken pieces instead of music or vocal or instrumental. So now we've limited it down to the 1,200 spoken recordings. Then you can click on Performer, and that list is then dynamically regenerated again. So you can see of all the spoken performers for Victor there with the number of records they made. So you can pick, like everybody probably suspected that Len Spencer and Cal Stewart would be up there, but Carlos Cusacks did 98, and he did language instruction and things like that. So this browsing, I think, will allow people to get at materials that we don't think would be totally obvious through a conventional printed discography. So I'll turn it over to Sam, and he can go back to...
We'll just show you a few more things in the database. We could sort of stop on any of these pages and tell you how exciting we find all these. Carlos Cusacks, you know, the resources to look into the names was a lot of fun. I know that the last session on 78s talked about that. I think that the database, as I recall, Cusacks might have been the one that Fagan and Moran only had his last name, but enough sort of web surfing found that he was a Spanish instructor at the Naval Academy. We also have descriptions for every record. They aren't fully genres. They're just sort of a description of what might have been, you know, in the 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock position on the label. But we've, again, tried to normalize them a bit to cut them down. We want to show you a few more ledgers real fast, but really to tell you what's coming. We've done through 1913. That is to say, that those five matrix series, the E's, the 8's were very short-lived. And then we move from there. We're working on, of course, 14, 15, 16. There's several other kinds of recordings Victor made. Victor imported an awful lot of materials from their sort of sister company with whom they had a license agreement for both masters and patents, the gramophone company G&T. And then they also sent out their own field trips. So I want to bring up our senior discographer, someone who knows more about these, of course, ethnic recordings in the United States. But again, because these weren't made in the United States, these were not in EMOR, Ethnic Music on Records, but they will be in our discography in the coming months. And Mr. Spotswood is right here to talk a little bit about Victor putting those cutters into trunks and hopping on a ship.
Well. Very early in the phonograph game, all of the record companies that had the capital and the wherewithal found out that they needed to cover as wide a territory as possible. The phonograph was an instrument that didn't have to plug in, and therefore it was operable theoretically any place on the planet, except maybe down in the Arctic where it would tend to freeze up the phonograph oil. So as early as 1897, G&T in England was sending little portable recording outfits throughout the British Isles to make records. Soon after that, they were traveling to the capitals of Europe and then into Eastern Europe and, of course, to the what was, I want to say USSR, but pre-Soviet Russia in those days. And even before 1900, into Cairo, and over into Damascus and into Athens. And so the recording activity spread out very widely in Europe. In America, it took a little bit longer to catch on. And in fact, the company that Victor acquired, Zonophone, in 1903, had already, the European branch of Zonophone, had made records in Buenos Aires as early as 1902. And I think those were the first records to be made in any of the Americas other than this one. That same Zonophone company was out in 1905, and as far as we know, went to Buenos Aires again, to China, to Hawaii. We think to Hawaii and China, but we're judging from some matrix on in number information that we're sort of holding tentatively. In any case, Edison previously had gone to Mexico City in 1904. Victor gets out there in 1905, and they're in Mexico City. That is their debut trip outside of the United States. But not long thereafter, they've gone to Cuba, and by the teens, they are all over the place. By 1907, I think they're in Rio de Janeiro and Buenos Aires again, and so on. By the teens, they are going all over South America, the idea being to connect up with local retailers that could handle recordings, that could handle phonographs, that could handle needles and other supplies, and it turned out to be, I mean, it was a very good way to make money in the pre-internet, pre-television, pre-everything days. Phonographic entertainment was very, very pervasive for those who could afford it. And so Victor, after 1910, started sending Raymond Sui and what's-his-name Cheney and other engineers out to South America. Now we're looking, I can barely read this damn thing, and I'm sure you can't. Oh, that's, oh, much better. If I stand at some distance here, I'll try to holler so that I can be heard. But no, flip that other one back again.
Listen,
that was
it's
great.
The same page.
This, well, there's more of it.
Okay. Well, this is actually the bottom of it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let me linger with this for a minute. Y'all shut me up when I've gone on too long, because I can do this forever, you know. We've got a wonderful sort of a personalized document here. Sam picked this page out. It's one of the best pages because there's little critical, personal, observational remarks scattered through. Where'd it go? I turn my head and it leaves. All right. Anyway, we'll start at the top, where you can see the lower half. It tells you who the outfit is, that they're representative of Caracas. Up in the right-hand corner, that they were recorded in Caracas, and this is the only confirmation we have is on these written ledgers. And who the director was, because you don't see his full name anyplace else. No personnel, although that does appear on some instrumental ensembles of smaller, you know, 4 and 5 person groups. But hey, this is our 8 clarinets, 3 saxophones, 1 piccolo, 1 flute, 3 first cornets, 2 second cornets, and so on. How did they get all those instruments in front of a horn? Anyway, they made these wonderful records. Unfortunately, they were all called overseas recordings, and for the most part, they were designated as such, and they never appeared in the American catalogs, the Victor numerical list, or anything. As far as we were concerned in North America, those records didn't exist. And for our purposes today, because I don't really know many record collectors in South America, the records by and large have never been found and we can't hear them. But the level of documentation we have for them is absolutely extraordinary. There's one note up there.
Here's one right here.
Man playing the maracas shakes the room terribly. And so they come back and make another take. Where's the one about the guy with the violin bow strikes the horn?
Right here.
Here's one that's broken in transit. That means these big waxes, you know, they got to ship these things back to Camden. Not all of them made it, and there's a victim. Put baritone on trunk was blowing towards floor. I get a partial idea of what that means, but you do get an idea of the producer, the musicians interacting, and everybody sort of carving out fresh aesthetic territory to try to get decent performances on mess. There's the one up there. Something violin player struck in horn on last stroke. And there's a word there I can't read.
Finishing,
okay. Yeah. Okay, and I won't try that other one. But anyway, the notes are full of these. The only other place I have ever seen this kind of spontaneous diary note-taking are the Jeanette ledgers that had Wickemeyer, that famous grouchy recording engineer. When he didn't like something, he'd go ahead and record it if they told him to, but he put lousy down there on the page, right on the recording page next to it. Well, they just about did that here. And these things have been enormously fun to work with. These books go up through 1917. Naturally, there's a lot more recording after that. Unfortunately, these books will tell you what was issued and what wasn't issued. And when these books don't exist anymore, the only information you have is about what was issued. and so we've lost all of that information from that point on. Anyway, these have been enormously fun to work
Thank
with.
You. And these will get into the database in the next few months. This is 1917, and we'll be going on from there. One other, just a few other things. I mean, one of the things is the need for information bias. David showed you the comment field, but we hope to find South American collectors. Argentina, there are notebooks, I believe, from Argentina at all, and there are several other mysteries. One of the things, another thing we'll be adding is Victor's audition recordings. That is to say, here's July 18th, 1912. Evan Williams is doing his thing, but above there, we are assuming Camden here. That's why you saw probably Camden. Doesn't say, but we sort of default to Camden after a certain year. But here is a list of, what is that, about 10 names. And in the middle, next one, David, is Fanny Bryce. And this is, I'd have to go look in Rust and Debus to make sure that was the first time she attempted recording. She wasn't very successful. But recording artist, really. But there's her trial. And then we will designate all the trials. We have several thousand trial recordings. And the other great mystery of what we have, you want to go back there?
You want to search for?
Oh, but all that could do, oh yeah, we can look at that and sort of see how we'll designate her trial. We have to give them a matrix number ourselves. They don't have matrix numbers. So you get something in brackets, the trial of 1912, whatever that is, July 16th. We don't know the title, unknown title, but we do know it was New York. We don't really know the status. And, these things could be sitting on a shelf somewhere in Iron Mountain. Victor does have a lot. And then finally, the other great mystery is overseas work in the Far East. Victor and when Victor and G&T divided up the territory, Victor got East Asia and put out thousands of Chinese, Korean, and Japanese recordings, and we know next to nothing about them. And this will be something that we're looking forward to filling in. This information will not be filled in the coming year. If you can go back to the pictures. And we can just finish up with a picture of the Chinese disc and just sort of say, this is where we hope to sort of have, I don't know whether that's his master's voice he's listening to or what, but that these lovely Monarch labels, these 10-inch records, 4-4-1. We're going to stop, but before we do so, we can't stop with just acknowledging all the people who work. First of all, I sort of want to say hello to Mike Beal. Thank you for the video. We're proud you found it. You look great. We hope you're feeling great. And it was great to see Ted and Bill. And yeah, a little hand for Mike Beal. Some of the other discographers, Carrie Janelle is here. Carrie, thank you. Carrie's worked from Tony Russell's discography. Carrie's going to be working on some of the overseas material. Been indispensable to have his care to the detail, and knowledge on this project. Our programmers who built this brilliant database, I can't wait for you to get to work with it, are here. Michael Oshutka of Properly Sorted. I know those of you that aren't coveting this database are coveting this beautiful tie with subtle nippers. You never thought those words ever went together. It was a subtle nipper, and these were given to me by the Victorettes, a group of students at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who are the most dedicated and hardworking, and I've never seen morale like that. That love this project, love these recordings, and gave me this tie for this occasion. And so, hello to the Victorettes and their boss there, who is the full-time editorial assistant. But the only person who works on this project full-time, Jill Breeden, who couldn't be with us. And of course, I mentioned John. You saw issue dates on here. Tim Brooks provided us issue dates. When Tim Brooks was very young, he too was up there in the Victor archives, looking at those blue cards, looking at the other ledgers of record numbers, writing down when a record was issued, when a record was deleted. I don't think I've forgotten anybody. Oh, and there are two Margarets who work on it, Margaret Urschler and Margaret Cundiff. So we get lots and lots of help. It wouldn't be possible without everybody, particularly David. Thank you. If you get the clipboards back, please, we will get you the URL. and then you can start criticizing it. And don't forget the movie tonight, which is, the program says you need your badges. You do not have to walk down the streets of Palo Alto with your badges. Everyone will be welcome at the theater. Bring your friends and family and street people.
We have 5 minutes for questions.
5 minutes for Q&A.
Good.
Can we answer questions or look up things for anybody? We always wanted to know that recording date.
There's something I've always wanted to know about matrix numbers and how they will control an issue, especially by companies that had several studios in their complex. Was there a clerk in charge of
I wish I could go back and show you one of the ledger pages. We don't know exactly. I'm sure they signed blocks of numbers for different studios. John, have you had that experience? And of course, when we get into the 20s, we'll be in the Pacific Group too. One of the people I neglected to thank is Miss Briggs, who was Victor's scribe of all these ledgers for many, many years. Her name appears at the top of the ledgers, so thank you, Ms. Briggs.
Another person to thank is Alan Kelly in England, who has done incredible work on Gramophone Company. And I think we're getting to a point where discography is not a solitary occupation. The data is all intertwined, and it's really much more efficient to share and work together towards getting this out. We don't want to wait another 20 years and come up here and show you Victor through, 1918 or something like that. So working together is more fun too in many ways.
Ben?
Was there any thought or discussion on trying to get the actual ledgers or blue cards online?
We decided to approach Victor slowly. And the most, being selfish, we wanted to get this done. The first thing to do is to get it on, available and get it into this discography. We would love to put it upline. Santa Barbara has a wonderful server a system that could do it. We've mentioned it to them, and the person who gave permission said, let me just get you the scans first, because if you ask to put them online, then I have to go ask higher ups and you might kill the whole thing. But the person who gave us permission for the ledgers, we're very grateful, and he sort of knew how that system worked. So we've thought about it, we've tied them, they're tied together somewhat in the database, and maybe someday, we would love it, but it's a permissions issue.
We have permission for use University of California, so if you need it, you could always come to us. Currently we have about 14,000 pages of ledgers, and we have, I don't know what percent, but we're working on the blue history cards right now. We've got about 35,000 of the blue history cards scanned, and there's probably a quarter million to 300,000 of them. So
we had to scan them from microfilm. We wouldn't have been able to afford to scan them individually. John?
I have a comment, or a question, perhaps. There are a lot of people in this organization who saw the history cards years ago. They might have been doing a small discography. I don't know what sort of research you were doing. You may have seen cards that no longer exist. So if you've got some piece of paper that you never published in your attic, get it out and send it to us, because there are cards missing, and you would like to know what you found on them years ago.
There are two major ledgers missing. One, it's believed they know who has it, the movie ledger when they did movie soundtracks, the 12-inch ledger, the early pre-matrix C ledger, and I do know those letters, God knows, it has been missing for way before Fagan and Morin. So we have dummy numbers for most of those. You'll find them in brackets. Anybody else?
The cards that have this note annotations, how far up, how far chronologically do they go?
The ledgers themselves?
Well, the recording information, remember the little hexes and the symbols.
Oh, that's the little,
extended too far.
It doesn't extend too far, and they're erratic. It's only those little hatch things only go into about 1901, and then there's some other. But then they are recording what kind of sound box and what the configuration, what the cone.
Even like that little code we had in several circles. How
only through 1910. Okay. Through 1910 they stop. Then they're chronological by matrix number to 1935. And then Victor threw away the chronological ones. They cut them up and they arranged them by artist. But they sent a copy, not as well annotated, but a full copy of the chronological ones through the 78 era to the British Library, and Ted Fagan got a copy of those on microfilm. Or they, I guess they sent it to EMI or the Gramophone Company, and then it went to the British Library.
Andy, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering what are the chances BMG, Sony, will let you go into the vault to look for some of those trials or other things that you think are well done?
Well, they said they would look. And we've sort of, and what I would suggest is that when we get these up, you're going to get a full list of all the trials, and, you know, call Ray Stark. Well, Ray Stark just died, but someone interested in Fanny Bryce would go and ask for Fanny Bryce. We found the Gershvin trio, Gershvin or something, those early trials of his, Shalom Aleichem, Al Jolson. They may have them, but we haven't asked. But when this is out there for everyone, you know, we hope they are asked, and, you know, maybe they look and license them or reissue them.
You didn't have access to the database that was made from the material with books or fire
ground. No, they some of the preliminary data of Ted and Bill's was put into a big Oracle database, and then they took that and they inventoried their Iron Mountain holdings. We haven't been getting into holdings. We've been very careful with them. They've been really generous, but we haven't tried to snoop too much. You know, I'd love to see some contracts. That would tell us whether Victor Herbert was conducting, if we had contracts and things like that.
This should be the last. This should be the last.
Pardon me?
This should be the last.
Okay, thank you very much.
I work with the Sony BMG archives, and I just want to reassure you in some respect, even though I'm not a Sony employee, I have access to them. And they have thrown, for the first time since I've been there, they've thrown a lot of money at the archives as far as realizing what they have, and putting new cabinets, new card files in. And so I think that for the most part, what you have there, especially the cards are all pretty much intact, and the ledgers are all still there, and they're actually being taken care of better now.
I attest to that, and we have a wonderful relationship with them. We've given them copies of our scans in turn for their generosity and actually loaning those to our contractor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.